Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today we are introducing you to a new series that's not quite new. We've been doing faith transition stories since almost the beginning of Project Zion, but we're now going to collect them all together and make them under the umbrella series of Fair Trade. And this is going to be where we share the faith transition stories from those who have found Community of Christ from an LDS tradition. So, like I said, we've been doing these for a while, but the first episode that we're going to do officially under this series is going to be with Steve and Roy Otteson. So I'm really excited to talk to them. I've never interviewed a couple before, I don't think. So I'm really excited about this. So welcome, Steve and Roy.
Thanks, Brittany.
Thanks, Brittany. We're excited for the opportunity.
So really quick, I didn't say where you were from or anything. So do you want to just give like a, you know, 3-5 sentence just blurb about who you are to let our listeners know?
Yeah. So we live in Redmond, Washington. We've lived here, I guess, about 17 years. We moved here in 98, but so it seemed like 20, but we lived about 3 years in Idaho to be in our family somewhere in that time. But we feel like we've been here about 20 years. So we love the Northwest. It rains a lot. We don't like this time of year because it seems like it will never stop raining. But
I've been complaining.
Yes. Every spring about this time, she gets antsy and not sure she can take it. But we've been here for a long time, so we do love it.
Yeah.
I'm originally from California, Los Angeles area.
And I grew up in Idaho Falls, southeastern Idaho.
Nice. All right. So far, this sounds pretty stereotypical LDS. I'm excited.
Yes.
I know a lot of couples who one's from California and one's from Idaho. So great. All right. So let's just dive on in. I'm just curious about your background with faith and religion, and you guys can just kind of bounce back and forth with each other, or, you know, Roy can go and then Steve, or Steve and Roy, or however you guys want to have the conversation go. But yeah, just tell us a little bit about your background. So like before you guys met, you know, just briefly, how was religion sure. a part of your life?
So I grew up, as I said, in the LA, actually like Santa Monica, Malibu, Pacific Palisades area along the coast. And my mother is a convert. My father is an active Mormon, and they were married and they had me, and I'm their only child. When I was 6 years old, my parents got divorced, but both of them continued to raise me in the LDS church. So I grew up with it. It was really, for me at the time, it was a beautiful place. It was kind of a beautiful community to put their arms around me. When I had a hard time with the divorce and with things at home, I had that beautiful community and structure. So it worked really well for me. As teen years, it's provided a great support for me. I went to BYU and loved it. And met Steve there and just lived the Mormon thing. I thought, you know, my parents got divorced, and so I'm going to find somebody and be with them forever, and I'm going to have the perfect marriage and make it work and live happily ever after, like a Disney film. And so, yeah, we were really active for 20 years. My faith means a lot to me. I've always been really close. I would say close to God with, like, personal experiences and scriptures, prayer, making all that really important in my life, going to the temple, all of those things. And I think organically, my faith was changing through the years with just experiences that I experienced in life, but it was so subtle that by the time Steve came to me and told me about his faith changes, and we were discussing doctrine, we realized that I was already kind of in a different path than what our doctrine teaches. So where I am today is I'm on this journey and I have no idea where I'm going with it, and just kind of hanging out in the wilderness and actually really enjoying it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. What about you, Steve?
So I grew up, like I said, in Idaho Falls. It's about 40% LDS, I think. So it felt very Mormon. I really loved the church. I was really into like learning doctrine. I liked release time seminary. We had release time seminary there. And I was kind of nerdy about doctrine and I like learning things. I served a 2-year mission in Germany, which was really hard, but also really great. I love Germany and the food and the people and the culture and the language. Missionary work is tough sledding there, but still had some great experiences. I really look fondly on that experience. And then went to BYU, met Roy, and yeah, we were just doing the Mormon thing. We enjoyed going to the temple together for a long time.
Yeah.
Served a lot of callings like in bishoprics, a lot of time spent away, and a lot of scouting activities, which I really enjoyed the scouting. But it's kind of weird. The last maybe 2014 or so, something was going on with my faith, and I couldn't have even told you what was going on.
Yeah, the last year, and I even noticed some changes in him. Like, I just noticed little things, right? Like, he wasn't reading his scriptures anymore, and I had to practically beg him to go to the temple. Like, but we didn't even know how to even discuss it, because he didn't know what was going on with his faith. And all I knew is that he was just frustrated, but he didn't even know why.
I'd read the Book of Mormon so many times, and I got to the point, I said, I can't read another page. And I couldn't have told you why, because I still believe it was literally true, but I couldn't open it. I couldn't do it. It was really odd. And I remember sitting in church in November of, I guess it was 2014, in a testimony meeting. And I just, like, something snapped in my head. And I'm like, what are we doing? If we all believe this, why do we need to convince each other every month and bear these testimonies? I know this is true. I know it. I know it. If it's so true, you know, I don't bear testimony that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. So why? It was an odd thing, but I still had no reason to go anywhere else. I still thought it was literally true. So anyway, 2015, Roy was gone out of town and I was at work and I had this odd thought come in my head and it said, Google the Book of Abraham. And I said, why would I do that? And I had the thought again. It said, no, seriously, Google the Book of Abraham. And 15 minutes later, it all crashed down like that quickly. And I'm like, uh-oh, I don't believe any of this. Like, I went from believing all of it to none of it. And Roy's out of town. And so I had 3 days to just like research and read and read. I'm like, this is not getting any better. It's getting worse. And she's coming home from the airport and I was picking her up. She was at a funeral in Utah 3 days later. And she said, we need to go visit so-and-so to give her, you need to give her a priesthood blessing.
Yeah. Cause I was Relief Society president at the time.
And so
she warned me I was going to have to do that. I'm like, I don't think I can exercise the priesthood because I don't believe in it. And so I said, I'm going to have to tell her in the car on the way home from the airport that I don't believe in the church anymore. And I did. It was horrible.
It was bad.
The way I wanted to do it. It was really hard.
We both cried a lot.
We cried. I wasn't sure if she'd want to leave me. You know, I'm sure you've heard of couples that get broken up over this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that and she was like, take that off the table. Why would I do that? And I said, well, you don't think we'll be together in heaven anymore. And she goes, well, sure I do. And I said, well, that's not what the doctrine says. And she said, I don't care.
And that kind of started a few months of lots of conversations, realizing that all this time we also had, like, my faith had been changing and evolving, and that we had testimonies of two different, very different gospels. So Estes was very literal and doctrine based, and mine was definitely all more on feelings and experiences in life. So that was interesting conversations.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time deconstructing, but at the same time, Roy and I both have what we call the God gene. So we just have this need for spirituality, and I didn't know what I thought about God anymore. I really didn't, but I was just like, I guess I get to figure out what I believe, which is kind of a little bit intimidating, but a little liberating too. And so I started going to other churches and I found some churches I liked.
But remember what I said to you?
Yeah. First it all blew up and she said, wow, I guess you're on your path to find God now. And I said, no, I'm just sitting down. I don't know anything. I don't know if I'm finding God or not. I don't know if I ever will. Like, my mind is just blown because it all crashed down.
From my point of view at that point, even though it was a really hard time for us, that was like the first time I started kind of seeing Steve pray again and kind of reading some things again. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe this is God working through him. And at the time I still had a testimony and I thought, okay, eventually maybe he will come back around to the LDS church. But this is, I definitely saw what I would call the God or the divine working through him throughout the whole thing, which actually gave me a lot of peace.
Yeah, I really, it's interesting. The Bible came alive for me like it never had before. Like I went into historical Jesus, which I still, like I read and listen to podcasts on that. It's really fascinating to me to try to get to the real nugget of who Jesus was, the things he said, why the early Christians believed in him. And to me, it's really fascinating to look at scriptures responsibly. And that's one thing that's attracted me to Community of Christ, because I feel like they do a very responsible job with scripture. They don't proof text it. They are very, are able to get down the dirt and say, okay, what was the context of the scripture? Who was saying this? And what did the first people who heard this, what might have they taken from it? And how does it work for us today? And to me, it was just refreshing, the different way to look at scripture. And for me, the Bible became way better than this literal harmonized thing that I'd been taught, which doesn't work for me anymore. But it's just breaking it down and getting real with it really was great for me.
So you said that you were attending different churches.
Yeah.
So time, like, was Roy still going to the LDS church? I mean, how did you guys balance that out?
Yeah, she was.
Keep going. So when he first told me that he no longer had faith in the church, that took a while for me to get used to that. And he was really thoughtful and kind and went to church with me with the kids to sacrament meeting for about 6 months. And then, like I said, I saw God in all of it. I felt like I also saw then God also, I felt like prepared me for each step that he took. Like I knew before he even told me that he couldn't go to sacrament meeting anymore. I knew that it was like so painful for him that I needed to let that go of having him sit there with me. So, and he asked me about it and I said, yes, I know you need that. So he didn't go with me for about 6 months and I was going to the LDS church with our kids for about another 6 months. And then my older two, who was then eight, one was 18, 19, and the other one was 17 or 16. One started working and the other one, they just stopped going as well. And, it was hard to fight, you know, pressure and push them to go as they were adults. But I still took my youngest with me almost a whole nother year after that. And I would come with you to different churches you were trying when I could.
But I remember I would go to different churches and have these great experiences. And then I'd come home and tell you and you'd be frustrated because at the LDS church, you didn't really get much out of it.
Yeah.
And yet I was having these amazing spiritual experiences in other churches.
Sundays became literally my hardest day when he stopped coming with me. For me, people didn't, I don't think they really necessarily treated me different at church, but it was just a whole different experience. The lens I was hearing things through completely changed, and it was very difficult to go there. And often I wasn't fed. I was barely given some crumbs of something because we'd have a whole meeting on priesthood or something. Right. And my husband no longer, you know, didn't mm-hmm. believe anymore. And then I go home and he'd be talking about these beautiful experiences he's having at other churches. And I felt frustrated because I was still going because I still had a kid who wanted to go. But then I also wanted to be with my husband experiencing these things with him. So I really felt stuck. And for a while, I like almost resented. Like I was just really felt stuck and frustrated because I wanted to be experiencing the things with him, but also felt like I needed to be there for my kid that still wanted to go. And so when my last child decided he no longer wanted to go, that freed me up to be able to do what I wanted to do, whatever I wanted to do every Sunday.
So one of those times where I went and she wasn't with me, I went to my current congregation, Community of Christ, and I got turned on to them by John Hamer. I heard you have another guest that say he also heard the episode where John talked about how Community of Christ can be a potential landing place for people leaving the LDS faith. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to that and I thought, can that really be real? Can there be a church like that where they come from the restoration, but they're more liberal in what they let you believe? Maybe they don't care what you believe. And so anyway, that intrigued me and I went, and like I said, I'd been deconstructing everything and I didn't even know what I thought about Jesus anymore. But the woman who started the service, who's a dear friend of mine now, she started with this, it was kind of a visualization meditation of Jesus. And I'd never done anything like that. And I said, sure, I'll play along. And I closed my eyes and went through it. And it was really, really a beautiful, touching experience. And I like I said, I didn't know what I thought about Jesus, but I had this incredible moment that really touched me, and I had tears streaming down my face, and I think the people in the congregation were like, who is this guy who just showed up crying, and we don't know. They had no secret training, so they didn't know. But they were super kind, and we had potluck after, and everyone was super kind to me and listened to me and just put their arms around me, something I didn't get from my congregation that I felt like I'd given everything to, that basically said, there's the door if you don't believe the right way. And here are these people that I could tell we came from the same Joseph Smith place, but they had a much different outlook on that. And yet we could still share some of the origins. And it just really felt like a wonderful place. And then, but we're still, I was still trying different churches. And then that October we had, there was Sunstone in Kirtland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I felt really, really inspired. I said, honey, we need to go to that.
Yeah.
We both need to go.
I was really surprised because you just on a whim, like it was like a month from then, you're like, I bought tickets and we're going to, like, really wanted to go. And I'm like, well, I had been to all of the historical sites when I was a little girl. My father took me on a church history tour and Steve had never been. And so, I was really excited because I was still attending the LDS church, but I had read a lot of things. My faith definitely changed. By that point, I would have called myself definitely a nuanced or kind of New Order Mormon, but I was determined to stay in my community at that point. And it was just really beautiful because we both went there with the commonality of the history.
And it was beautiful. The experience, we sang For Everyone Born in the Kirtland Temple.
Mm-hmm.
And I still can't get through that hymn without sobbing.
Yeah.
It just really, really touches me. And that was such a beautiful experience. And then Community of Christ was hosting it. And
we sang it after an LGBTQ devotional.
Yes. In the Kirtland Temple, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then Locke Mackay was there and was a great host. And I just was thoroughly impressed with the Community of Christ again. The people there and mm-hmm. the even the bookstore that had all the books you would call anti-Mormon, which are just actual history books. And they're just so open. I like, this is amazing because they're it's the same experience that John talked about in Mormon Stories when I think he also went to the Kirtland Burt's bookstore
mm-hmm.
and was surprised at the openness there.
Yeah.
And I encountered the same thing. And so just over time, I had great experiences with the Community of Christ. And it just eventually became the place I wanted to go when we were together going to church.
Yeah. So to backtrack a little and not to like dwell on too much negativity, but I do want to ask you,
sure.
What kinds of things were you both encountering that made you kind of change your faith in the LDS Church? I know, Steve, you said the Book of Abraham, Googling the Book of Abraham sent you kind of down the rabbit hole, if you will. But why I'm asking is because I'm wondering what in Community of Christ or how was Community of Christ able to kind of fix, and I did air quotes when I said fix, those issues for you.
Yeah,
so what were the issues and then how were you able to reconcile them in Community of Christ?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, like I said, I deconstructed everything and I lost maybe all of my literal beliefs. And yet, as I studied historical Jesus, I realized here's someone I want to emulate. Even though I don't, you know, whether it's literally true, it didn't matter to me anymore. And I wasn't sure that my congregation would accept that. And they asked me one Sunday to give my, just kind of my story in 5 minutes. And I did. And I was very open about, I don't know about my literal beliefs anymore. And the next one after me, also a dear friend, she said, she thanked me. And she said, Steve, I'm a more literal believer, but you're totally fine here. Like if no one cares what your beliefs are, you know, we believe in Jesus and we believe in peace and all the great things that Community of Christ stands for. And to contrast that with my Mormon bishop, when I told him, I don't believe this is literally true. He basically, in not so many words, said, well, there's the door. He said, you can go to Sunday school if you keep your mouth shut. Like you basically can't talk about what you believe anymore. And I was like, well, I guess I'm done. I guess I won't go. I don't know. That doesn't sound like something I want to do. And so the difference, Community of Christ has almost to me gone through a faith transition the way I have on a macro level, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me that you can, you know, I've talked about this before, the old history books, the old like stuff from the RLDS church. And it's like this crazy reflection of the LDS church, but from decades ago. And it's amazing to me to read that, to think, how did they get from there to where they are now? And I'm still trying to figure that out. But anyway, to me, it's a reflection of my own faith journey where I had this very little belief and things got deconstructed. But I found I'm really a fan of Jesus and what he stands for. And that's, to me, is something worth talking about and learning about and preaching.
And you also like that with Communion of Christ, you can hang on to your pioneer heritage, kind of like the heritage, the restoration heritage means a lot to you.
Yeah, the common heritage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of ancestors that came across the plains and were polygamous, and that's fine. That's their choice. I don't have their story, but for me, I can say I can still hold on to my, to the restoration, but make a different choice, right? The choice that doesn't believe in polygamy, or that's found a healthy way to look at scripture, interpret scripture, that has, to me, a healthy way of being a prophetic people to keep the canon open and figure out what does God want the church to do? What is he asking this church to do? And the common consent, all of that, to me, it's just, to me, it's the way I wish my tradition had done. And it's fine that they don't now. I found something else. I'm kind of to the point where I'm like, I'm not going to tell them what to do. I'm not expecting them to tell my church what to do. So that's fine.
You've also said that what you love about Communion of Christ is, at least even from like the moment, was it Wallace B. Smith, I believe, when it's like, are we going to go with Joseph Smith, right? Like hanging on to this, or are we going to do it Jesus? Is that the conversation? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was his dad, W. Wallace, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the conversation basically like, where are we headed with this church, right? And the decision to, I believe, like put humanity above the institution and just what's best for the people. Transparency is what's best for our people and be able to be open in discussion. And you guys have grown a beautiful community out of that. And you said that you appreciate that you feel like often with their choices that they put humanity above like saving.
That's amazing to me because
the institution saving itself.
Normally institutions want to preserve themselves, and at every chance they got, I felt like they made the ethical moral choice, you know, ordaining women, LGBT,
even though many members left.
And they knew, and they knew members would leave, and they did it anyway. And you just don't see organizations making choices where they know this is going to hurt us, but we believe it's the right thing to do. And so to me, it's just a really, I don't know, it's a great profile and courage to me.
Integrity.
Yeah, integrity.
Integrity and honesty, which is like your number two, number one moral.
Yeah, it's super important to me, integrity, right? And that's, of course, we hear this from people that leave the LDS faith is, why didn't I hear the real story? And was it kept from me? You can debate that. But when I realized I didn't know the real story, it really irked me because I felt like truth was important. You know, I've always loved the hymn, I'll say what is truth. Mm-hmm. And someone in my congregation even heard that and wanted to, you know, we sang that in our congregation a few weeks ago and that was fun. Mm-hmm. But that's a hymn that's always meant a lot to me.
Yeah. I relate to so much of what you guys have said. It's just like if the listeners could see me, I'm just like nodding in agreement this entire time. I'm like, yep, I felt that way, exactly that way. And, but yeah, the way that I've described it is it felt like, if I had grown up with divorced parents and I never knew my mom at all, and then I only heard my dad's side of the story. And then when I was an adult, I suddenly met my mom, learned my mom's side of the story. And I'm just like, oh, that actually has validity to it. And that actually makes sense. You know, all these puzzle pieces are being put together. And, that's what it felt like for me when I found Community of Christ is, you know, this story that I thought that I knew.
Yeah.
And I could regurgitate it, you know, as well as any Mormon 20-year-old. But yeah, when it came down to it, I didn't have the full scope of the story. And so then what do you do when you actually have the full story? There's a couple different ways to go, but you know, for me, Community of Christ was the right decision. So, Roy, what about you though? When you said that your faith was changing and your faith, you realized that it was grounded in experience. And I can relate to that a lot. Josh, my husband, is more of the doctrine guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he would get stuck on little things that, or, you know, be devastated by certain findings. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. You know, like different things devastated me. And it was just kind of weird to bounce back and be like, why don't you care about that? And he'd be like, well, why don't you care about this? And we're both like, okay, well, the common denominator is that we're agreeing that this isn't really working for us anymore.
Yeah.
But so I'm curious, what kinds of things weren't working for you, et cetera?
So even before Steve went through his faith transition, I would say, like I said, my faith kind of was changing organically. Like we had just some good friends with health issues, things happen to them, right? Like our bishop, we loved him here in Redmond when we moved to Idaho. He ended up having like 5 brain tumors and dying. And so just things started happening and you're like, wait, why is that happening to good people? Because I think I was in many ways still at a faith. I don't know what level of faith I was at, but I was still kind of, if we do the right things, then we will be blessed, right? And I knew that bad things happen, and that doesn't mean that people were bad that did those bad things, but it's like subconsciously in a way, I think I did. So my son, my oldest son, got ulcerative colitis. I was serving as the Relief Society president. My husband was in the bishopric, and my oldest son, who's the sweetest, best, most obedient child, got ulcerative colitis, and I had to watch him go through so much pain and hurt, and like priesthood blessings would give him, nothing was helping him and fixing him. And so I had that going on, and then I had Steve come to me with his faith, and here I was really sick present, and I just felt like my world was blowing up. And I did get closer to God during that time. I prayed and prayed and prayed all the time. And, felt really strongly when Steve was telling me in the car, he didn't believe anymore. Felt really strongly to just don't judge and try and understand and to love him. So in that came being open to having conversations with my husband and realizing that this was a huge thing for him and our family. And that if I was going to, he needed somebody to talk to. And so I need to study some of the things from sources that I trusted, but I need to study some things so that we could have some conversations. So my experience of watching my son go through so many things and the faith working, my husband's just being at church alone with my kids, seeing things through a new lens, hearing things at church like, you know, your family has to be sealed in the temple to be together forever, which I didn't believe. And basically realizing that I had no say anymore, because shortly after Steve left, they released me from the site president and they put me in the nursery, which I was fine with at the time because I wanted to just hide. I really did. I just wanted to hide away, and I didn't want to talk about it because I was so emotionally on the cuff that I think one time I bore my testimony when my son was in the hospital for his first surgery, because some members had come over and raked our leaves and had done some kind things. And I just got up. I just said, I don't know what I believe, but I just know God loves us and thank you for your service, right? Like, I didn't even know. So at that point already, everything had just kind of blown up for me. So I think that's how it's like my life experience. Like, I had lived there, and I feel, I hear this happen to people all the time, that it's like until my world blew up, I did not have the empathy for others necessarily who were sitting alone at church. That LGBT kid, you know what I mean? Like all those people that on the outskirts, I went and hugged them every week. I told them I love them and stuff. But it's like when it happened to me that I was no longer living in the perfect Mormon box, then I understood how painful it was. And then I married Mormon Enigma, and all the Relief Society stuff broke down for me. All the women stuff, seeing all my ancestors who used to be able to give blessings, who used to be able to do all these things. And really the whole recognizing the patriarchal system that we're living in, and then discussing with Steve, and then realizing subconsciously the way that our relationship had been, you know, in some ways patriarchal. I would submit, like we got along really well, but a lot of times I would just go to him even to ask permission for something. You know what I mean? Instead of like just discussing as partners do, like asking permission about things and stuff. And so I just started recognizing small little ways that this has infiltrated all of our relationship, the way with my children, and realizing I had 3 boys that I had raised, and oh great, like, and so we're, you know, I hope they don't think that their wife is going to just do all the housework and they're not going to help, you know what I mean? And and not that Steve was always helpful, but just I was the stay-at-home mom. And so, mm-hmm. you know, he was at work all day. And so we were just in those roles that we were taught is the best way to live. And so all of that just blew up for me. And one day I realized I felt starved at church. I felt starved. And the last day my son and I went there regularly, what we heard in sacrament meeting was not supportive of families that had members who like part member families. And then when he went to his Sunday school class and he got out, he said, "Mom, today they talked about our family." And I said, "What do you mean?" And it was a substitute. So he didn't know Thomas and our family situation. Mm-hmm. But he said, "Well, today they taught us that if somebody in your family leaves the church, then everybody in the family will leave the church and then you all can't be in heaven together." And he's telling me that and saying that this is, they're talking about our family and kind of joking about it, but I knew it hurt him. Yeah. And I just thought, this place just doesn't work for us anymore because we are being told that our family is not enough, that we are not good enough and we are not enough and that we are broken. And I believe that our family I still believe that we'll all be together in some way when we pass this life. I don't know how that looks at all. But I just feel like the love connects us as a family. And so to have people telling us that we're not good enough, or that if you have somebody in your family who's questioning and that person's evil because they're having you question and think intellectually, I wasn't okay with that. And so I've been several times since then to Relief Society things and stuff to support friends. And then we've been many times as a family to support friends whose kids have gone on missions, which we, through all this, I also learned about the stages of faith development. That's been huge for me, and accepting, understanding it all, being able to go into the LDS church and listen to everybody and hold space for all of them and where they're at on their journeys. So
thank you for sharing all of that. I really appreciate that you've already gotten to that place where you can hold space for people. I have to be honest. I don't know if I'm there fully. I try to be, but I definitely still have little triggers that pop up, and it might be because I live in Utah. Utah's its own animal.
Yeah. Sure, it's different. Yeah.
Yeah. We were on a walk today and I just said, man, that's got to be really hard, you know, in the middle of all that with your family there. That has to be, I think, take a lot longer to process through all that, especially when it's there in your face all the time.
Well, I will say that I'm really grateful to be in the Salt Lake congregation because so many of us have come from the same place. And right. So there's a lot of empathy and understanding. We just had a new couple come in today and they were shocked when they heard that the majority of our congregation is former Mormon. And they're like, "Oh, well, we should fit right in." And I'm like, yes, yes, you will.
Yeah,
so we do have a lot of support here that, I know that seekers everywhere don't have. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses for living in the Beehive State. But this brings up something that I did want to ask you, how the dynamics between your ward or your neighbors or your family or just the Mormon community where you're at in general, how have those dynamics changed and shifted over the last couple of years?
My parents were very upset at first.
You guys have worked through it.
We've worked through it. I told them that I joined Community of Christ and they weren't thrilled about it. They haven't really asked much about it. Mostly we just don't talk about religion. So when we go to visit, it's just something we don't bring up. We're actually going to a nephew's farewell there in May. So again, we're genuinely excited for him and our other, any nephews or nieces who go on missions, and we tell them we love them and support them and hope they have great experiences. So, but it's something that's kind of unspoken. People in the ward they're friendly when they see us, but I just kind of think it's out of sight, out of mind, right? You're so busy in a Mormon ward trying to just keep your head above water and all the callings and taking care of people that show up every week. So the fact that they don't really think about us, I think that's normal. We're just not there. And so, like I say, no one's been has been unkind to us. They'll see us on the street or if we go to a meeting for a missionary, they're kind. And so that's been good, but family's kind of a delicate thing still.
Yeah. My family the same way, as Steve's, and I'm also an only child. So that makes it really difficult for my father. And I have a lot of grace and love for him with that. He wanted me to go on a mission. I was going to, but then I met Steve and got married. So I have three boys and waiting for them to go on their missions. And that's not happening. My boys, through this whole transition, their story is their own, but as of right now, they have no spiritual, they don't want anything to do with organized religion for sure at all right now. And as far as the ward goes, the ward's been overall, it's been good respecting my boundaries. Like, they put me in nursery and that was fine at that time. And then when I said, you know, I can't do that anymore, they've released me and stuff. I have visiting teachers who respected my boundaries. I told them, you know, I'm just really busy. But, and I actually was still visiting teaching up until recently myself, because I had my best friend of like 20 years here, who's LDS. We've still continued to keep that good friendship with she and her husband and several others in the area. We've been here so long. We have some friends that's been great. We've been able to cross the boundaries with this. We've been able to cross, I don't know, the bridges. You know, I think just also just going through midlife, we can relate on that level. Midlife is just hard. And so we can relate with some of them on that level. So while we don't talk religion or kind of what we're going that way, but we can just relate on, yeah, some stuff is really hard and the world turns upside down. And so we can relate that way. And, but recently I asked to be taken off of, the visiting teaching and home teaching list, just because for me, ethically, I mean, I haven't been there in regularly for like a year and a half now, I think. And being a Relief Society president, and just in the community for 20 years, I know how much is asked of members. And I ethically just feel like if I'm not putting into the community at all, then I'm definitely not going to ask for something out of the community, as well as, you know, at the moment where I am with my faith, I don't believe it. So, I'm just like, take me off. I'm one thing for you to mark off your box that you don't have to worry about. So we have Steve's really great faith community, and, we run a support group for Mormons in our area who are going through faith transitions called the Eastside Pilgrim Society. And we made really good friends with them, and that's kind of our community right now, right? Like, we're helping someone move next week. We get together and go do things all together. And that's been interesting watching people go through that. They come in sometimes really hard space, having a place to be held. They're able to move forward and move on. Some people have joined other churches. Some people have not had any other community at all. And some people are coming in still kind of new.
I'm really glad that you guys have been able to find, you know, replacement communities, because I know for me, that was one thing that kept me in the LDS church probably longer than I should have, is because, you know, I thought that my entire community would vanish, and I didn't know how to step forward without having some sort of community.
Well, and I had to, like, we were going to Steve's church, and this Crystal Springs congregation is fabulous, but it's 35 minutes away. There's not a lot of people there our age. And so they've been wonderful for spiritual community. But it was about a year and a half ago, I said to him, I need a community. And so that's when we started the Eastside Pilgrim. I'm really social, and I thought, I need some people closer and that we can do things. So, but we ended up, now we have people like an hour away both ways. I mean, we're all spread out all over the Puget Sound, but we have made some really fabulous friends through that. And I'm grateful for that.
We named it Eastside because that's like a very specific part of Seattle, hoping only those people would be in the group, but it's way bigger than the East Side. So it's kind of a joke. It's still called the East Side Pilgrim Society.
Well, I mean, like, my whole mantra is, I love the, like, for everyone born, my huge mantra is, you know, if everybody's welcome to the table, then everybody's welcome at the table. Like, I don't care what lifestyle you're on. I don't care what, like, if you need some support and love and everything, come on in our community. We're here. And so that has.
And we've had mixed faith couples and the whole spectrum. So that's been great. Yeah. Just to, everyone knows that it's a safe place.
That's awesome. Can I ask how you get the word out that this exists, or?
So in a couple of our podcasts, we've talked about it and people have found out that way. And it really, it goes a lot of times, we're on Mormon Spectrum. So we're listed on there, but it's a secret group, so they have to email us to get onto it, because there's a lot of people on there who still haven't come out to their families. And so that's why it's secret. But a lot of them just added, you know, often, like, if they're going through faith transition, someone says, oh, I know so-and-so is going through that. Maybe you want to talk to them, and then they will connect them. So we have like 140 people in there now. And I think, I know we don't have that many come to the gatherings. I think the most we've ever had at a gathering at one time is maybe like 50 or 60 people.
That's still impressive.
Yeah. It's great. Lots of great friendships. I think especially the people, even the people who live an hour away, like, they kind of all start to know who's near their area, and they've made some really good friendships and can be there for each other.
Yeah. It's been good to tell people know where other people nearby are. It's been very helpful that way.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, it's just like natural networking, you know?
Yeah.
And sounds like there's a lot of common ground and a lot of common threads. But it is different going from, you know, an LDS ward where the people are within a mile or two, or yeah. I don't know how it is out there, but I mean, here it's like literally my block and that's right. it. But then to go to, you know, any sort of community, whether it's a church community or this that you guys are talking about, that's, you know, you're spread out an hour, half hour to an hour, it creates a different dynamic.
It does.
But I kind of like it, I've realized. So before we started recording, you were telling me, Steve, about Roy when she was in the congregation and she did the prayer for peace, et cetera. So I want you to tell that story, but I also, if you want, but my question out of that is I am curious of how your congregation has embraced your family, it being a quote unquote part member family. And if that's like a happy spot that you've been comfortable with, or if you felt any pressure to join you, Steve, or you, Roy, right. or, you know, can you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I was going for a while by myself, and then Roy started coming, and she wouldn't always come with me, but we kind of a deal where I guess two Sundays of the month we go to my congregation. It's funny, we call it Steve's congregation, even though we both go. I'm very certain they consider Roy a part of the congregation. I've seen her name on the, you know, the address and name email list. And this last week they wanted me to do the disciples generous response and Roy to do the prayer for peace. And so they emailed me and it all looked fine and we were happy to do that. And so we went, and why don't you tell them what you said today when you did the prayer for peace?
So I'm well aware that they consider me part of the congregation, but from my perspective, from the tradition that I'm coming from in the LDS church, as far as I know, and I think it's even the handbook, and I've never heard a person who's not a member of the LDS church has never gotten up and given a prayer, given a thought, given a talk, done anything. And it also has to be a person in good standing, somebody who's active, somebody with a temperament, or somebody, you know, not children or anything like that. So, so when I got up to do the prayer for peace, I just thanked them. I told them how grateful I was that they asked me to, that they included me and asked me to give the prayer for peace today. And several of them afterwards were like, well, why wouldn't we? Like, you're part of the congregation. And I just explained to them, that never would have happened I've never seen that happen in the tradition that I come from. And that's one of the things I love about this congregation that Steve has found, is that I know, and today as well, in the service, we had some discussing things during the service. And the questions were about
fear and doubt
and Jesus. And I was able to be completely honest, like, I don't know where I am with that. I'm just sitting on the road. I have no idea. And they totally held space for that. It was not a problem at all. And that's actually, I told Steve that if I'm ever to join another Christian organized religion again, I would join the Community of Christ, because we've been to Methodist, we've been a whole bunch of different places, but of all the Christian religions, yours is the most, everybody's welcome to the table, open, transparent, of all of the Christian traditions that I've seen. And so that's something that if I was to join, I could get on board with that, with your church.
And you asked pressure to join.
I don't feel pressure to join there at all.
Yeah, and I never
really
did.
Respectful yeah. of my.
I've been going for a long time, and I finally asked somebody, how do I join this church? No one had asked me. It didn't matter to them if I was confirmed or not. And I decided to keep my Mormon baptism, which I thought was great. That, again, I could hold on. My father baptized me, and I can still hold on to that. And I was confirmed into Community of Christ. And we have a lot of strong women in our congregation. I insisted on two women confirming me. That was really important to me. I really love seeing the women exercise, just being in charge there and leading things. And it's so refreshing to see that. So that's
blessing the sacrament.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. first time I heard a woman bless the sacrament. It was really touching to me, and even using the familiar words that I grew up with, but hearing that in a woman's voice, it's really, really important to me. Mm-hmm.
So I don't mean to beat a dead horse with this, but I'm curious if you, if you could just, you know, give like a brief overview of exactly why Community of Christ is a good fit for you. Like if I was coming to you and right. I didn't know much about Community of Christ, you know, how would you describe it to me? If I was coming from an LDS background of, you know, why it would be worth looking into.
Yeah, I've had people do that. And I, in fact, a lot of former Mormons are confused. They'll say, wait a minute, you joined another Joseph Smith church? Are you crazy? And I have to explain to them, you know, look, they've gotten real with their history, right? We've been frustrated with the history we never learned. They'll learn that. And it's diffused by not claiming to be the one true church, right? When you no longer claim to be the one true church, people can come out with you with any salacious detail in church history. And you can just say, so we're not the one true church. That doesn't matter. And so to me, it started with Joseph Smith, and there's still some echoes of that, right? Like it's not all bad. Like the prophetic people, I think it's beautiful. The Community of Christ still has the open canon and can say, no, God still speaks to us and still wants to tell us as a people what he wants us to do. I love the music. We've been to lots of Christian churches, and I swear Community of Christ is the best hymnal. It's just every week there's something different I haven't heard, and the words are very thoughtful and beautiful, and so that really works well for me. I mentioned the familiar language of the sacrament, which I like, but then the focus on Jesus to me is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The liturgy.
Right. The openness and belief, like no one is asking you to believe a certain way. There's all kinds of levels of belief, and that's totally fine.
Pretty much, it's what you wish the LDS church.
Yeah, right? The LGBT inclusion, women's ordained, the responsible way that scripture is done. There's just so many things that appeal to me as a former Mormon that just really work well for me. And I, the first one to admit, it's not for everybody, right? Like, spirituality is very personal. And never again will I... You know, I was a 19-year-old punk in Germany trying to tell people they should leave their church that their family's been in for 2,000 years and join my Utah-based church. And I look at that, I'm like, wow, the hubris of that. And so I'll never again tell somebody, look, you really need to be in this church or else. I won't do that. But for me, it's been the perfect landing place. And yeah, not everything's perfect, of course. Like there's always things, you know, it'd be nice if there was more people if it weren't so far away, but in the end, it's been a really perfect place for me spiritually, just to heal and just the different way that things are done. It's just been perfect for me.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And then Roy, to kind of piggyback on that, since you have seen Steve go through, you know, his whole faith thing, and I really related to a lot of what you said, seeing my husband do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, how have you been able to find comfort in his decision to actually join another church? I mean, is it just echoing what Steve said, or, you know, is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
I think it's just like what Steve said earlier. I have seen a lot of peace come into his life, and I have seen a lot of excitement, and I have seen him grow closer to the divine and just become just probably a better person all around through this whole faith journey, like just more calm, more open, less judgmental. And so for me, that totally gives me peace. And I'm so grateful that he's found a landing place and a place that means something to him. And that it's a community that has open arms for me and my children as well. My children don't go very often. They go maybe once a year. But they're very welcome there. We're very friendly to them, and they're always very welcome to me. And so I have no, like I said, I still believe that we'll all be together in some form. I don't know what that form looks like on the other side. And so I have no fear about it. I just see nothing but beautiful things, for my husband's journey of being a member of Community of Christ. And so I have only good things to say about the community. My own personal journey is, for me right now, where I am on my journey, is I'm still breaking down the patriarchal stuff. So I sometimes have a hard time with Jesus because I'm like, oh wait, that's still a man. I have to get through and get to God. And I've been working through that though a lot, and I'm seeing a spiritual director, and I'm actually applied to try and go do like my own spiritual direction program myself. And so I'm hoping as I work through that, that I'll come to a healthy place for myself. But I've been working a lot with trying to find the feminine, divine and stuff. And what's great is whenever I mention that at his congregation, there are many women in the congregation who can relate to that, understand that, give me book ideas. Like, that's totally fine to discuss that there, that we need some feminine and the divine. In fact, most people there, I feel like they refer to God more as like a gender neutral type of entity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been a really good experience for us, at least with our congregation here in Crystal Springs. I mean, we were in liberal Seattle, but yeah. They've been just the perfect place for Steve.
Yeah, good. So Steve, Roy just talked about her future endeavors a little bit with getting a spiritual director and doing that. What do you have planned for the future?
So I'm planning on probably doing the
Master's
of Religion or seminary through Graceland. Mm. Grace, I know you've been doing that.
I have been doing that.
Yeah. So like I say, I feel like I'm kind of a Bible nerd in the historical Jesus, and I've just read a lot, and I don't get tired of it. It's really fascinating to me. And I've looked at just the course descriptions of what there is required for that. And it looks like something I'd really enjoy doing. So
we kind of chuckled at that because I was looking for something and he was looking at that and I'm like, yeah, that's your thing. My thing is like the experiences and art and feelings over here in this spiritual direction program with the Franciscans.
That's perfect though. I'm in love with that. And I will say though that the Community of Christ Seminary, it's been really helpful for me. There's currently three former Mormons in the program, and there have been up to five or six the year before, and so it's been really good. And I've talked to, you know, my peers a lot and kind of seen the other side of the story. I'm currently in church history, so I'm totally geeking out. Although I'm at the end of two church history classes and I am ready for a break.
That's great.
I'm sure my professors will listen to this. It's been a great two classes, you know. But yeah, it's been fascinating to kind of see how the church developed and to connect all those dots of, you know, like you said, that the church has been on a similar journey that a lot of us have been on personally. And right. So to connect those dots has been really fascinating. So I'm rooting for both of you.
Yay. Thanks, Brittany.
So is there anything else that you'd like to share or leave us with? Or
no, I'd just like to thank you for you and Carla and Karen and all the great content you guys have done. It's funny, I was going to Community of Christ and Roy wasn't yet. And she was the one that kept telling me about your podcast. And she's like, you should listen to this podcast at this church you go to. And then I finally got around to it. And I'm like, yeah, she's right. This is really good. So I'm just, every time there's a new episode that comes out, I'm really excited to listen. So thanks for all the great work.
Well, thanks for your support.
Wasn't
right.
No, it's true. I try to listen to her because she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, you guys have done a great job and you've been a huge part of my journey as well. And I'm just, yeah, really grateful for Community of Christ and them holding space for mixed faith families. Oh, one, like, well, I know there's other mixed faith families also that come to the congregation and they've all felt very welcome there as well. They've come to the retreats and other things and all of their kids. And so you guys do a great job with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, and I think it's important, and I think it goes back to what Steve was talking about of letting go of the idea that you're the one true church. It really liberates you.
It really does.
Because, you know, I'm not worried about anyone's salvation anymore, and no. So I just want them to be happy and to, you know, find whatever connection they need to with the divine or not, or right. Community or not. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's a lot of freedom in that, right? A lot of freedom and all the anxiety. We're just discussing that today, that the fear and doubt actually goes away when you're not worried about that anymore, that you're just finding joy in people's journeys as they share them with you.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.